You're listening to SpursCast, episode 644. My name is Paul Garcia, and I'm your host here on the SpursCast. Today, I'll be joined by Project Spurs writer Colin Reed. In this episode, Colin and I will discuss the Spurs in the last six games, what sample size should be used to evaluate the team, and DeJounte Murray's all-star chances. Let's go ahead and jump right into this episode with Colin. Colin, you haven't been on the SpursCast since October. How have you been?
I've been doing really well. It's been kind of an up-and-down season. A lot of changes in my personal life. We were talking about that before the show. I got married, so I kind of had to take a break from some of this stuff. But happy and excited to jump back in and get talking about some Spurs stuff.
Like I told you off the air, you know, congratulations. We're really happy for you, the whole team at Project Spurs. Let's just jump right into where this team stands right now. It's just all over the place with just everything that's going on. I mean, not just with the Spurs, but all the teams in the NBA right now. So, SpursCast listeners, Colin and I are recording this on a Thursday evening, January 13th. Let's begin with going over the last six games because that is the last time before I recorded a SpursCast. So the Spurs did go 1-5 in the last six games. If you've been watching the team, you know that they've just had a lot of instability because of the COVID situation with the team where multiple players, rotation players, got placed into health and safety protocols. So let's go back to last Tuesday, Colin. The Spurs are on the road at Toronto, no fans in the building in Canada, and they lose pretty rough here. They lose by 25 points. DeJounte Murray was still out at this point in health and safety protocols. The Raptors were favored by 7, so basically Toronto took care of business. Then the next night, the Spurs had a really big win. They go on the road to Boston on a Wednesday, and they pick up a 2-point win. It was a very close game throughout. Both teams battled back and forth. DeJounte Murray made his return. He played excellent in that game. Boston was favored by 7.5, but no, it was the Spurs who pulled out that really good win. And at this point, the players were all saying, you know, this seemed like the team was about to turn the tide here. But then we get news that, you know, multiple rotation players got placed into health and safety protocols. Derek White, Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson, Thaddeus Young, Trey Jones. And so just like, you know, that's a lot of those players right there are some of their key rotation players. And so on Friday night last week, they're on the road in Philly. They lose by 19. Philly's favored by 8.5, so kind of Philly just took care of business. Then this past Sunday, the Spurs, you know, had a pretty good game against the Brooklyn Nets. Again, missing multiple rotation players. They lost to the Nets in overtime by 2. Brooklyn was favored by 10.5. They had James Harden. They had Kevin Durant, Patty Mills, everyone, except for Kyrie Irving. And the Spurs only lost by 2, and they forced overtime, again, with multiple rotation players out. Then on Monday, the Spurs were on the second night of a back-to-back. They go to New York to play the Knicks, and they do lose to the Knicks here by 15 points. The Knicks were favored by 6.5. And then the most recent game was one that's a pretty bad loss for the Spurs. They got back Keldon Johnson and Devin Vassell from health and safety protocols, and they were playing the Houston Rockets, hosting the Rockets in San Antonio. The Spurs finished a 7-game road trip, and the Spurs ended up losing this game by 4. It was a close one, but the Spurs were favored big in this one by 7.5. The Rockets just shot really well from 3. They really attacked the paint, shot I think 77% of the paint against the Spurs' defense. So what are your thoughts on these last six games?
You know, I think kind of what you were saying for those first 5 games, especially on the road with all the health and safety protocol stuff. It really is up in the air in terms of, like, how could they win any of these games? That Boston game, you know, looking even at the sheet that you have here and just saying, oh, hey, that Boston game was when Murray returned, and that Philly game was when the next set of guys were out. So you have that, like, one-game sample where you have this overlap mm-hmm. of, like, a lot of the Spurs core actually playing, and they happen to win that game. And I don't know if that necessarily means, like, oh, hey, if everyone is there, they're this amazing team that should win more than they lose. But I do think that that's indicative of something, that when they had their core there, they were actually able to win a game, especially against an opponent who's had a struggle of a season but is trying to turn it around themselves. I do think that the Houston loss is a bad one. Mm-hmm. I was keeping track of kind of their score by quarter. And in the third quarter, I think with over 6 minutes left to go, they had about 14 points. And then I think they ended the third quarter with only 21 or 22 points. So they had this 6-minute drought where they failed to really score at all. And I think that that was kind of a big turning point where during that time, they weren't really scoring, but their defense wasn't stopping Houston either. And then mm-hmm. you kind of had a similar situation at the end of the game where all of a sudden their shot making was pretty crazy. They were making these threes to stay in it, to make it back a little bit, but they couldn't stop Houston on the defensive end. And that inability to get a stop was really keeping them from pulling back into the game or pulling ahead in the last couple minutes. So for a while there, they couldn't hit anything. And then finally, when they couldn't get a stop. And it's just kind of embarrassing for them, I think, against the 15th team in the 15th ranked team in the Western Conference. That definitely was a winnable game, especially when they're trying to get to that magic 26 number for Pop. But yeah, I think, like you're saying, the 1-5 is what the kind of, like, if we were just going by Vegas odd makers wins or losses, that's what they were expected to do, and that's what they did. So you know, the first game back from protocol for a lot of the guys, and hopefully they'll be getting even more guys back in a bit. And I think it might take a game or two for people to get reintegrated. So hopefully we see kind of the Spurs that we did before all of this craziness started back up, starting in about a week or so.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So just like you said, you know, they weren't expected to win these games. They were supposed to go 1-5, and they ended up doing it. The only thing, they could have basically done better than this had they beat Houston, because they, you know, that Boston win got canceled out by the loss to Houston, so they could end up going 2-4. So on the season, you know, right now they are 15-26 through the, basically at the midway point. They've now completed 41 games. You know, despite all this, losing five games, like I said, in the last six, they actually haven't moved too far, because the rest of the West is also bad, you know, and everybody's just dealing with injuries and players and health and safety protocols in and out. So they only dropped from the last Spurs cast from 11th out West to now 12th. They're just barely in 12th. They're still very close to that play-in game. They're only 1.5 right now behind Portland, who is currently in 10th out West. But because of all these losses, they have fallen a little bit from, like, the 9th place on. So they've kind of taken a bit of a dip there in being close to competing for, like, that 9th to, like, 6th seed, you know, in that range. You know, again, because even though they've lost all these games, they really haven't improved their lottery chances, because other teams ahead of them in the lottery have been doing pretty bad as well. So they only have the 7th worst record. So that's about a 34% chance of the top 4 pick, or an 8% chance at number 1. So again, their lottery odds really haven't improved, even despite all this losing lately. We've seen a hit again because a lot of players have been out on their offense, where they were 11th last time we recorded. They've dropped to 16th, and then also on defense, they were at 16th, the league average defense, and they moved all the way down to 20th. You know, like we mentioned, Colin and I, that you know, multiple rotation players are back now. They've been through health and safety protocols, and this is in DeJounte Murray, Lonnie Walker IV, Keldon Johnson, Devin Vassell. Doug McDermott has missed 7 games in a row, being in health and safety protocols. However, the Spurs released their injury report on Thursday evening, and he was not listed on there, so we are assuming that Doug McDermott will finally return to the team. Derek White is also close to returning, because he's now listed as questionable to play Friday against the Cavs. So basically, they're going to get a lot of the rotation players back, you know, from health and safety protocols. And the only player left in health and safety protocols from the rotation right now is Trey Jones. He's still listed as out for Friday. And this is something the players mentioned. I think it was Brent Forbes or someone mentioned that basically, in a way, you know, it stinks that they got COVID or got placed in protocols, but at least they're getting through it now, and they're hoping that it doesn't, you know, happen again throughout the rest of the season. So basically, they've kind of gone through this rough period of everybody, you know, most of their guys getting placed in protocols, but now they should have the majority of their team for the rest of the season, you know, as long as they avoid any other kind of injuries. And then some other just team news, you know, that wasn't too major here. The Spurs, because they were missing so many players, they had to sign some players to the hardship exception. So they signed Tyler Johnson and Anthony Lamb to 10-day deals, but I don't think they're going to re-sign those players because their deals do expire on Saturday. And as we saw, now that everybody's back, they're probably going to get DNPs those players unless it's a blowout. So, Colin, did you have any questions, any comments on any of those facts right there, or stats right there?
So not too much. I think, other than, if I'm doing my math right, so if the fans out there who are team tanking, the Spurs are only a game and a half out of the 4 seed in the lottery, if you want to look at it kind of in that backwards way. But I think that their best chance to slip back there was during this COVID time. And I do think, even though I don't know if they're a playoff team or even a play-in team, I do think they're too good to fall into that top 4 lottery spot if everyone is available and healthy. So, you know, they actually kind of cut it a little bit close. You know, Houston is the 15th ranked team in the West, and they have 12 wins now, and the Spurs have 15. So they're, I think, 4 games ahead, because Houston has 5 more losses. So, you know, it actually is kind of getting a little bit close to them being in a really good lottery spot. But I think now that everyone is back and healthy, I think they're going to be too good to kind of fall back into that range. And I think they're probably going to hover around from here to 10th kind of the rest of the season. So other than that, you know, they kind of got within Shooting distance have a really good lottery odds there, but I think now that everyone's back and healthy, I think they're going to rise above that too much for that to matter as much as I think some fans would like.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially if, you know, if all their players are healthy and then they're able to be back for the rest of this season. I think that they're going to be basically, like you said, just too good to not lose that many games. So now our second topic, Colin, is let's just, you know, what do we do with this sample size? The fact that, you know, basically since December 23rd, around Christmas time, this team has been dealing with players in and out of the lineup because of these health and safety protocols. I remember DeJounte was one of the first players during December, and then, you know, it followed with the different players, Lonnie, and then, you know, and then most recently the multiple players. So when we look at that time period from November 24th to December 23rd, that's a very interesting time frame, because that is basically after Jakob and Jock Landale went into protocols and they finished their protocols, and basically the team was healthy for that time period. You know, yes, there was some injuries for some players, but nobody was in dealing with, you know, health and safety protocols during this stretch of about a month, from November 24th to December 23rd. So how were the Spurs performing during this time frame? They, in 15 games, a 15 game sample size, they went 9-6. So they were playing winning basketball. It was really their offense that really took off during this time frame. They were third on offense, scoring 115.6 points per 100. Again, currently they're 16th on offense, scoring 109.4 points per 100. And then their defense was about league average during the stretch of 15th, allowing 111 points per 100. And then for the season, they are ranked 20th. So the defense isn't too far. It was really that offensive jump. So I guess my question to you, Colin, is that right now, you know, since they haven't got all their players back, is that who this team can be, that team there with that 9-6 team that we saw from November to December? What are your thoughts there?
I think it's closer to that than the 1-5 we just saw, which I know that was a road trip and there was a good amount of tough opponents in there. I don't think that this team is a third on offense team. You know, I think that there isn't like one, like none of their like lead options are efficient enough scorers that it makes me believe that they are a third on offense level team. That 15th on defense seems about right, and I feel like they can maybe even push a little bit higher. But I do think they are closer to that 9-6 than they are to the 1-5 that we just saw. So I do think that is going to be a change. Unfortunately, I saw on the Spurs broadcast yesterday, they're going to be playing a lot of games at home in the back half, which is good for them, but they have like the fifth hardest remaining schedule, and that included that Rockets game last night that they lost, so it's only going to continue getting harder. So it's kind of a mixed bag where they're definitely more talented and they have kind of a better system flowing now, but they're going to be playing harder opponents than they were for a while there, so I think that it's somewhere in the middle, but closer to that 9-6.
I think that's what's so weird about this team, you know, despite the record that they have and, you know, they're 12th out west, is the fact that, like, they can just, when they're healthy, they can go out and beat the Warriors. They can go out and beat Utah. It's like, it's just they basically compete against Brooklyn the other day. And then, that's one thing I wanted to say right there, is just like, it's really hard to gauge, you know, how good this team could be at times, but then also, you know, they have had, I think this is now their fourth four game losing streak. It's just almost like a very roller coaster-ish season. It's a very unpredictable team, especially when they're all healthy.
The NFL playoffs are here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is kicking things off with a huge offer. Counting down to Super Bowl 56, new customers can get 56-1 odds on any wild card team to win their game. Bet just $5 and win $280 in free bets if your team is victorious. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you still have something to play for this wild card weekend. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Football Contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use promo code TBPN, and get 56-1 odds on any NFL team. Bet just $5 and win $280 in free bets if your team wins. That's promo code TBPN this wild card weekend at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
And then the next topic I wanted to address, just discuss, again, it's a very small sample size, is Lonnie Walker IV's play. You know, he was also in health and safety protocols for three games. Then he returned, and a lot of his teammates were still out, so he got more opportunity here lately. And again, it's only four games in January so far, so it's a very small sample size. I want to continue to reiterate that. But Lonnie's just been really aggressive, Colin. He's averaging right now in these last four games 16 points per game on 15 shots. We've seen him start a few of these games. He's still launching about the same amount of threes, 5.8 threes right now during the stretch. He's still not shooting well from three. He's making only 26% of his threes during this time frame. However, it's his free throws that have really increased. He's gone from 1.9 for the season to 4.3 right now attempts per game. Let's see here. Assists, rebounds are about the same. Turnovers, kind of the same thing. Steals and blocks, again, not too much. We've seen he's playing about three more minutes. He averages 22.8 minutes for the season. He's at 26 right now. And when you look at his shot profile, again, for the season versus these last four games, we really see more aggression-type stats here, where in the paint, his attempts have increased from 33% of his shots to now 41%. In that dunk layup type range on the floor, he's gone up from like 20% of his attempts to 25% of his attempts. Even in the floater range, 13% of his attempts to 16%. His mid-range has also gone up just barely, 19% to about 21% of his attempts. And we've seen a decrease in his three-point attempts. So 37% of his shots come from the above the break three during the season. That's dropped down to 28% of his attempts. And then the corner threes down by about 2%. And so, again, we could just attribute this to Lonnie being more aggressive right now because a lot of players are out. So he's getting more opportunity on both ends right now, getting to be one of the lead ball handlers. But my question to you is, do you think he can kind of keep, not these exact numbers, but stay more aggressive and attacking rather than just being more a guy who's going to kind of pick and pop for the team? I mean, not pick and pop, but, you know, spot up for the team. What are your thoughts there? When his teammates come back?
So that is a good question. And I know that just kind of with some of the other players that the Spurs have on the roster, that was, I think we actually had a podcast after their very first game, and we talked about how the bench could be a good lineup for Lonnie and Devin Vassell to just run together, and he could be very aggressive with that lineup just because there are so many mouths to feed in the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. I think part of the trouble here is I appreciate that kind of aggressiveness, especially when you go from 1.9 free throw attempts per game to 4.3. That was something that you and I had talked quite a bit about on Twitter back and forth early in the season, talking about how the Spurs weren't drawing any fouls and how that mm-hmm. was kind of hindering their offense. So I do like seeing that number. And I think if that aggressiveness can continue, then that helps the Spurs a lot. However, that 26% shooting, I'm not sure if that is a stat worth staying aggressive for. And it is kind of hard when you see that some of those threes moved to the mid-range area. I do think, you know, hey, he is moving more of his shots to the paint, and that's probably where a lot of those free throws are coming from. So mm-hmm. I think if he can, like, exercise those mid-range shots out of his game and continue just really driving into the paint and continue drawing those fouls, it could be very good for the Spurs. But can it continue? I think it can continue a bench role, but I don't know if it can continue in the starters when you have Derek and DeJounte and Keldon all out there trying to, like, get their own. So that does make it a little bit harder. But I think in terms of a bench score, I think we're seeing what he can do to kind of keep the Spurs afloat because you know, I was looking at the plus minuses earlier, and DeJounte and Jakob lead the Spurs by a county mile, which it's been a long time since the Spurs starters were the positive plus minus and the bench were the negatives here. But if Lonnie can maintain this aggressiveness and maybe just change his shot distribution a little bit, and he can help get the bench a little bit more efficient on offense, then the Spurs could really have something where they have some sort of efficient offense throughout the game instead of just when Jakob and DeJounte are out there.
Yeah, so now that you were just saying that, you kind of reminded me more so. It's almost like, as I'm looking at the stats, it's almost reminding me a little bit more of Keldon's game, where but Keldon's actually fixed his problem. His issue was that he was early in the season, he was having trouble making the three, and now Keldon's become one of the better shooters on the team. Whereas Lonnie, Yeah, I think you're right that, yeah, like he's driving more and stuff, but, you know, there could be an issue there, if, especially when his teammates come back, if he's not making the three, because then he's not stretching the defense, which means that it's getting more congested there inside in the interior. So you have a good point there, the fact that for the season he's shooting 31% from threes, which is not a good number. And then even during this stretch where he's had more games, I mean, more opportunity, he's only shooting 26% from three. So I think that is kind of interesting. I mean, that's something very notable to watch is, you know, I think he does have to get the three ball, that percentage back, like we know that he's able to do, because I think that, yeah, that could end up being an issue. But again, maybe in a bench role, like you said, maybe, you know, if he's that guy that the team really looks for scoring immediately, and if he's going to be more aggressive and you know, really trying to break down the defense, maybe that's what the Spurs can have here with Lonnie. And our final topic, Colin, let's just discuss DeJounte Murray's All-Star chances. I know that the NBA has now released their first two rounds of fan votes. And so, you know, as far as a starter, it doesn't look like DeJounte's going to be a starter. He's not even cracking the top 10 for West guards right now in the two fan ballots. There's only two more coming out. And the fan voting does end in 9 days on, I think it's on January 22nd. So we know that, you know, if DeJounte gets into the All-Star game, it's going to be mostly by on the bench or on the reserves. And so who picks there? It's not the fans, it's the coaches. The coaches are the ones who pick the seven players for reserves. The reserves are going to be announced on February 3rd. And so I'm assuming that those players need to be picked before, I guess, by that date. So that only is about two or three more weeks here for the coaches to determine who they want as the reserves. Chance that improves DeJounte's chances is that Damian Lillard unfortunately is out with an injury, so he's out 5 to 6 weeks. It's the latest reporting from Chris Haynes, so that takes out one guard from the Western Conference. And then I just want to go over, you know, I was listening to a podcast recently by Zach Lowe on the Low Post, and he had a guest, Chris Herring. And they kind of just gave their early ballots. Again, it wasn't their final ballots, just their early ballots of the guards. I mean, the players out west. And so I kind of agreed with Zach here and Chris Herring. They basically had 11 locks right now, what it kind of looks like. It's, you know, Steph Curry, LeBron James, Nikola Jokic, Mitchell, Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, and then you know, off the bench, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Draymond Green, Karl Anthony Towns, Ja Morant, and Luka. And so the players to pay attention there who are going to be in the guard rotation are Curry, Mitchell, Paul, Booker, Ja Morant, and Luka Doncic. So that's 11 players total right now. Do you have any disagreements there, Colin, or do you agree with what they said?
No, I think those are locks, and I've kind of I listened to that podcast, and I listened to another All-Star Selection podcast by some national writers, and they had kind of the same 11 locks. So
okay. Definitely, so then basically, yeah. Yeah. So okay. So then that basically leaves one spot out west. Again, one reserve spot. It could be a guard or a front court player. And so now, you know, when we talk about the candidates, let's just look at first, like I would consider the playoff / play in teams, the teams that have more winning records. And, you know, that's Paul George. The Clippers right now, I think, are sixth out west. They don't have anybody right now in the you know, projected to go to the All Star game. So I think Paul George might be that player. He's averaging 25 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, no blocks in 26 games. Then, you know, the Lakers, you know, they're not having a great season, but Anthony Davis at least has the numbers there, 23-10. He's played in 27 games. The Mavericks, again, Luka Doncic has been out here for a number of games, so they've kind of relied on Kristaps Porzingis. They have him averaging 21-8 right now in 26 games. Then we look at the losing teams. These are teams with bad records. They're not in the playoff range right now. This is where you start to see DeJounte come in. So DeJounte is averaging 19 points, 8 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 steals, no blocks in 36 games. Again, I'm just rounding all these numbers. Then you have Brandon Ingram on the Pelicans with 23-6-5-1 in 32 games. And then you have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander of the Thunder, 22-5-5-1. So what do you think, Colin? For now, my opinion is that I think the coaches would give that slot to Paul George, that final slot, or do you see somebody else getting it?
Well, so Paul George is out as well, and I saw a report yesterday that he actually might end up missing the rest of the season with that elbow injury. I think the word is that he's tried to rehab it, but the rehab hasn't gone well, so he may end up getting a surgery instead. So he might be a scratch from the list too, which when you look at him, he is the obvious name, but when you take him off, it really actually does kind of become, like, I thought DeJounte was a real long shot, but now that I'm looking at your list, if you take Paul George off, like, I don't think he's the favorite out of the five remaining guys, but I actually think, wow, he has a real shot to make the All-Star team this season.
I agree with you. Okay, so now that you just said that, I think that just definitely increased. I'm doing some quick research. So yeah, I wasn't even aware of that. So yeah, so if Paul George is out, then yeah, that definitely puts a good chance for DeJounte. And I was also going to say even if Paul George got that 12 spot, I really feel like there's going to be maybe 2 to 3 injury spots. I just feel like whether it's players get hurt or maybe just, you know, somebody gets placed in health and safety protocols like right before the game. I feel like this is a really good shot for DeJounte to get into the All-Star game. So I think we both agree, right? Like it's not certain that he's going to get in, but I think he has a good shot, right? You agree there?
Oh, I definitely agree. I think, you know, if I were to make the case for DeJounte, I think sometimes as a player, you're competing against yourself. So like in Giannis's second season as MVP, he won MVP because he was able to raise his level even higher over his previous MVP season. If he kind of had just remained consistent, voters probably wouldn't have voted for him again because they're kind of comparing what he did in that second MVP season to the first season. And so you look at Anthony Davis, Brandon Ingram, and SGA, who have all... was Shea an All-Star last year? I feel like he was. I can't remember for sure, though. I feel like AD and Brandon Ingram definitely were. And they're having okay seasons. You can look at the numbers. And I know Brandon Ingram has actually picked it up in recent times. But I don't think either one of them are having as strong seasons as when AD was a perennial All-Star, the All-Star season that Brandon Ingram had. And I know SGA, I can't remember if he was an All-Star or not last year, but
no,
he definitely was having...
I don't see him as being on there.
Okay, he was definitely having a better season last year, though. So I think... the one thing that DeJounte has going for him over everyone on this list is even though when you look at the numbers, they're pretty close. And for someone like Brandon Ingram or Shea, the impact is going to be the same as kind of like the guy that's driving the whole thing right now. Mm-hmm. This is DeJounte's best season. And I think when you're looking at a coach and what is a coach going to pick, you know, I think they're going to be leaning to pick someone's best season over someone's off season, even if it kind of looks shiny. You know, I think now the question comes down to how much effort do coaches really put into this? You know, I've heard the stories that some coaches just hand it off to their assistants and say, figure it out, I don't care. And the assistants might be like, hey, I have to scout for, you know, the Warriors tonight. I'm just going to put down AD and not think too hard about it. So, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, I actually think now that I'm looking at this, I don't think he's the favorite, but he might be the second or third out of these five to get the 12th spot. But because of that, I do think there's a real tangible chance he makes the All-Star team this year as an injury reserve. So yeah, that was something I hadn't even thought of before either when you were saying that. So I actually think there's a pretty good chance that the Spurs do have an All-Star this season, which is pretty amazing considering their roster and kind of how they've played for parts of the season.
Yeah, no, I agree with you again. So like, I guess I would say that as well, just kind of like you, like, I don't think he's the favorite for that 12th spot, but I do see, like, if there's an injury replacement spot available, I think he's the favorite now. And that is – especially what you just said with Paul George. I mean, that's definitely right there with Paul George out, with Damian Lillard out. That definitely opens up a spot right now for DeJounte. So, again, you know, this – yeah, like you said, Colin, maybe this is the year where the Spurs finally get an All-Star back. They haven't had a player on the team for a while. And it's interesting because a lot of the broadcasts you've been listening to, you know, they keep saying, you know, he's probably not going to get in the All-Star game because the Spurs have a losing record. But with so many players are out, I mean, I think that, you have to look at a player like Murray. And, you know, all the coaches say basically that's the player that they're whenever they play the Spurs, that's the player that they're trying to stop. And you can tell by the defensive matchups. I like to look at those after every game. And you always see that DeJounte always has the best defender guarding him from the opposing team. The best wing defender is always on DeJounte. It's not always necessarily a point guard. All right, so that kind of wraps up this episode of SpursCast. Don't forget to visit projectspurs.com. SpursCast listeners, Stephen Michael continues to keep you informed on how the team is doing with this game-by-game analysis. You know, with the draft coming up in a few months, Benjamin Bornstein continues to scout different college prospects. And then our weekly preview series by Rocky Garza Jr. Continues to come out at the beginning of each week for the Spurs. So thanks to Colin for joining me here on the SpursCast, and also thanks to Michael DeLeon for mixing and producing this episode. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.